Okay. Welcome, everybody. My name's Derek Harden, and welcome to my Monday night chat show. This is the 79th in the series since lockdown. I'm absolutely delighted that you can join us on YouTube, on the podcast, or even live. Please do join us live if you can. Tonight, I've got Ava Fenari, who's sitting there in Albuquerque, New Mexico, with a big smile on her face. Who could have believed this time last year that we could be talking to somebody in New Mexico? We could have them in a conversation, we could have a training session, we could do some negotiations and all sorts of things. Zoom has actually been really fantastic. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Ava. I spoke in Albuquerque, New Mexico for the Professional Speaking Association 3 weeks ago, and Ava was my host and my introducer. And we swapped a few stories, and I found out that Ava came from Estonia. Estonia is a fabulous country, which I visited, and I've actually spoken in Tallinn, the capital. And so we really did connect. We swapped a few stories. We've had a Zoom call. And of course, guess what I did? I twisted Ava's arm to come on the chat show and tell us a little bit about her story, which is really interesting. And so a little bit about the story would be that Ava was born in Soviet Russia, actually, which Estonia was at the time, and for the first 13 years under Soviet occupation, until the Berlin Wall came down in 1990, and suddenly everybody was free. And those of you that don't know, Estonia quickly joined NATO as fast as they could, join the European Union to avoid something like that happening again. Because if you look at a map of Estonia, you'll see how close it is to St. Petersburg in Russia, and it's one of those three Baltic states that have swapped in between Russia and its own independence. I probably got some of that wrong, Ava, but you can correct me in a minute. And I know Ava then took off, got a sponsorship to go to study history in America, and has stayed there ever since. Welcome, Ava. Thanks so much for joining us. Tell me, what did I get wrong in that introduction?
You know, if you really want to nitpick, I don't really think it makes a big difference, but Berlin Wall came down in 89 and the Soviet Union fell apart in 91. Oh. But that's just the historian in me correcting you.
Yeah, you did study history. I should have probably got my research right then, shouldn't I? So, what took you to America and what made you stay there?
It's really a very straightforward and simple story. I always wanted to study abroad, and it seemed like it never happened. When I was working on my master's degree in Tallinn University, I got all of a sudden this notice that, listen, we have a scholarship for you if you can get there in 3 weeks. Anybody who has done any immigration work in any country, 3 weeks is a very tight window to get anything done. And you have to think that there is a long list of vaccinations as well you have to go through. So I was able to pull it off. And, you know, then at Christmas break, I met a boy and we got married and had kids. And here I am still in the United States. That was not the original plan, but sometimes life makes plan outside of your wishes.
Wow, you did that one in 3 weeks, did you? You went to America, got married.
Good one. Listen, if I look back, yes, that's exactly how it feels. It was fast.
Okay. You share the same sense of humor as me. Some of my American friends don't. Tim does, but so that's great. So what's the weather like in Albuquerque? Because you told me, I thought it would be really hot like Texas, but it's not.
No, Albuquerque is where I live in Albuquerque, on top of volcanoes. It's about 2 kilometers above sea level. So it's called high desert, meaning that in the summers, yes, it gets really hot, but during the nighttime, it cools off equally fast. So the temperature changes are sometimes, in Fahrenheit, 50, 60 degrees in Celsius, that will come to 25 degrees, 30 degrees difference.
Yeah, big change.
Yes. But it's beautiful. Like, it's one of the best places in the world to see meteor showers. And there's one going on right now at midnight. I was in my backyard looking at the shooting stars, about 120 in an hour. It was just magical.
Wow, that's fantastic. Let's go back. Let's turn the clock back to Russia. What was it like growing up in the under the Soviet regime?
You know, Derek, young people do not have a proper sense of risk and fear. I think it was William Faulkner who said it, that all the conflict in the world, and this is a very pertinent point because, Derek, you and I, we both teach people how to push past and find resolution for conflict. But all the conflict in the world is created by people under the age of 25. Between the ages of 25 and 45, if they are younger than 25, they don't have the means to really pull off a grand conflict. And if they are older than 45, they're too smart to do it. So, you know, I was a kid, I still had a great time, but I know how stressful it was for the adults around me. And Derek and everybody else here, I was lucky in the sense that even though the propaganda and the system was feeding you one story about the world, their ideology, because for any dictatorship to work, you have to constantly sort of brainwash your people. But I had families from both sides, from my mother's side and from my father's side, who never bought into it. So there was a lot of underground literature and songs and cultural little nuances that were part of my childhood. But Derek, the way it did affect me very deeply was that it was part of the Soviet Union's larger plan to really separate children from the parents. So at the age of 4, I was put into what I guess you would call a boarding school, into an institution where I would get the proper education. And you have to, as a system, as an authoritarian dictatorship, you have to get access to the young minds as soon as possible. So that was the grand plan. So yeah, that definitely has affected me in my adult life.
And your mum and dad obviously warned you about that, did they? I suppose they can't at 4, actually. I'm just trying to get my head around what it was like at 4, but you can't really, can you, at that point?
No, you can't, exactly. So, you know, kids at the age of 4, kids don't have a proper understanding of what is future and what is past. They just live in the present moment because the brain development hasn't reached to the point where they can fully understand what even tomorrow is. So yes, of course, I was able to go home in some weekends and whatnot. But I mean, yeah, as a kid, you think you have been given away. That's what you think.
At the age of 4, that's terrible, isn't it? Wow. Well, I didn't know that at all. So, yeah. So what happened? So what was it like when the Berlin Wall came down?
It was exciting. It was a really exciting time. And when I look at the footage from some of the events now going back, it's easier to see the real threat and tension. But, you know, Estonia was, I think, the only country where not a single bullet was shot during that whole breaking apart from the Soviet Union process. And Estonia went through something that's called singing revolution. Go ahead and Google it, and it's pretty phenomenal. So what happened was that pretty much one third of the country had almost like this confrontation with the Soviet army, and people were singing. So what do you do when people sing? I don't, you know, it was puzzling, but the energy shift in the whole confrontation was such that it de-escalated definitely the conflict. Yeah, take a look at it. It's a pretty cool phenomenon.
Yeah, maybe when we've stopped talking and we've moved on, you can put something in the chat about that so that we can Google that on mm-hmm. YouTube later. That would be terrific. And there's a lot of people on the chat show that talk about energy and creating energy. A lot of speakers whose job it is to create energy in the audience, and of course manage our own energy at the same time. When I spoke in Estonia, and we'll come to you in a minute, but when I spoke in Estonia, I did some research, as all speakers do. And of course, I was warned that people wouldn't laugh at my jokes, they wouldn't clap me, and they wouldn't smile. And I thought, oh, come on, it can't be like that. It's only a couple of hours on a flight. And luckily, I was told that, because in the break, everyone was quiet and went off and had a coffee. And at the end, they gave me a little clap. But afterwards, they were all over me, thanking me for going. And you confirmed that with a story about Elton John. What was that story?
Yes, Elton John was giving this huge stadium concert in Estonia. It was sold out because he's really popular in Estonia. But Estonians are really shy about showing really strong emotion. It doesn't matter who comes to present. And halfway through the 3-hour concert, Elton John shushed his band, his fellow members playing instruments on the stage, and he stopped the whole thing, got up from the piano and looked at the audience and said, "Do you guys even like me?" Because nobody was clapping or really cheering or showing or even singing along. So the response from Estonians was like, "Of course we like you. We bought the ticket. We are here. What else do you need?" But yes, Estonians are collectively, we are very reserved.
That's a great story. And the same with Michael Jackson, I think you told me as well.
It was the same with Michael Jackson when the Rolling Stones was in Estonia. Everybody knew where they were going to be staying. And the most, fanfare they got was six guys having beers in front of the hotel. The privacy is very important in Estonia. We don't take it away from people, regardless of how important you are.
Yeah, and as speakers, that just goes to show, or as negotiators or salespeople, if you go to another country, you've got to do your research, you've got to do your preparation, etc. No, that's great. So you're in our language, in England, you're an estate agent. I think that's a realtor in America, isn't it? In yes. The USA. What got you into that business?
It wasn't really something that I was really passionate about at the time. My husband decided he was going to be the next great real estate investor, and he asked me to help him. And what do I know about houses? I come from academia. It's a whole different ballgame. So I went to real estate school and got a real estate license. And by the time I got my license, my husband decided this was not his field at all. So here I was, now a real estate broker in the United States of America in New Mexico. And he still does what he does. So that's what got me into the business.
And you're still married?
I am still married, yes.
Oh, well, that's okay then.
That's a fair question.
And you studied history and conflict.
Yes, I did.
And you also got a master's in it as well.
Yes, I do.
And did you ever hear that story that no woman has ever started a war in the world? It's only men. You never mentioned that, or aren't we allowed to mention things like that in this sexist age?
I think it's, we have to own up to our actions, right? Yes. I can't think of any women. I mean, women have been the culprits. If you think the War of Troy, right? It was the beautiful Helena who really was the cause of the war. But yes, it is mostly men. So I think it's time for us ladies to really step up to the plate and balance some of that strong masculine energy in the world.
Yeah, I think you're right. Absolutely right. And there's too many wars going on in the world at the moment, and too many people starving, as we talked about last week about food banks, etc. Okay, now we talked about negotiation. You teach negotiation. You teach, yes, conflict management. You speak on it in the USA, and you had some negotiation tips for us, which weren't ones that I'd put in my last book. So I was thinking, I have got my pen here, and I'm looking forward to hearing those tips that I missed last time.
Okay. So I will start, and some of those tips, of course, Derek, you talk about those tips as well, but sometimes it matters how we package something. So most likely what I will be sharing with you today, or what you will be hearing today, is something you have already heard, but words are so important. Derek talks about words being so important. So hopefully something, the way I will describe it, will really resonate with you. And the first thing that I always tell the real estate agents is pause. Pause is one of the most powerful words you can ever use, no matter what field you're working in. And in the real estate world, we often present and write contracts late at night because people are at work or we are looking at houses the whole day. And so when it actually comes time to put together an offer or give a response to start negotiating, it's the evening when the brain is already tired. And let me tell you, a tired brain is a scary animal. And a scared animal works from a place of survival and not from a place for.
Okay. Keep going. You froze for a second there and I tried to chip in.
But okay.
You're fine now.
All right. So what I was saying was that a tired brain is a scared animal. And when you start negotiating and you are tired, you are now in a survival mode. The brain is in the place of survival. You want to be well rested. You want to come from a place of creativity and resolutions when you start negotiating. So if you have the capability of taking a break and pausing, then allow yourself to do that and sleep on things. Mornings are always wiser than the evenings.
Absolutely. Three great tips there. I'm such a great advocate of taking a time out, a break, go to the balcony, which is what Harvard call it, in anything, whether you're negotiating with your kids, with your husband, with your wife, or in any other situation. We can't think straight when we get tired. It is a negotiation tactic used by some unscrupulous negotiators to lock people in a room. I was in a negotiation on behalf of Barclays where they said, we're not having any food until you agree. And I thought they were winding us up, and we nearly walked out, and it was 9 o'clock at night, and the guy wouldn't order any pizza until we agreed. We didn't agree. We agreed to disagree. And over here, the Brexit negotiations are going on all night, all the time, etc. And I hope they're eating properly. I don't think anyone's going to agree. That's a great tip. Always pause. Probably one of the most powerful tips of all negotiation and influencing.
Yes.
Tip number two.
Don't escalate. And this is a tip that is very personal for everybody, because we have to, as professionals in real estate, or it doesn't matter what professional you are, pay attention how you use language, how you use your body, and how you present yourself, because your clients will feel what you feel. They will react the way you react. So I remember, Derek, you saying that it's 5 times harder to fake body language than it is actual spoken language. You have to master it. You have to learn to fake it. And I'll give you a quick example. If I walk into a house and I think the house is horrible and my clients are there with me, I am not the person on the market buying a house. I can't roll my eyes. Oh my God, look at this kitchen. It's not about me. Or if I see something that's wrong with the house and I roll my eyes at it, now I'm setting that tone that it's okay to start nitpicking. So you have to be very careful at your body language and spoken language both. So that would be my second tip. Get really good at it and always pay attention how you use words. It's so, so important.
That's two tips, actually, and I love them both because they're straight out of my own armory, and people start reading other people's body language, but they don't think about their own body language or dressing for success, how they come across. And then loose words, but I will come back to that at the end because we did discuss language, didn't we, between America and Europe. We'll come back to that. Fabulous tips. Yeah. Tip three, please.
Yeah. So tip three is kind of a great follow-up to tip two. And it's gratitude. One of the fastest and easiest ways to de-escalate any situation is by gratitude. Appreciate and be thankful. I'll give you an example how you would use it in your everyday and in with your clients and with anybody, really. Let's say you are late to an appointment. When you show up finally, don't say, you know, I'm sorry for being late. Say, thank you for waiting for me. Thank you for your patience. When you feel that in a negotiation situation, the emotions are starting to get really tense, then again, take that pause, of course, and say, hey, everybody, I really appreciate you working with me here towards making this deal work, towards making everybody win out of this situation. So be thankful. There are so many studies that show that how gratitude actually changes our physiology. So it shuts down the reptilian part of the brain that is really ego-driven and takes us to our frontal lobe, that is creativity and solution-driven part of the brain.
I thought you'd studied history, not neuroscience.
Oh, but that's part of history. Why we make a decision the way we make a decision. It has been so embedded into my history studies as well. There's always a story people tell to themselves, and the story they tell determines often how they, you know, feel justified to act.
Absolutely. And a lot of people don't understand that as well as Americans do, I think, in Europe. But no, that's absolutely right. And I know that everybody on here knows the power of positive thinking and power of positive words. That's why they're here. It's very interesting about gratitude, but we better move on to tip number four.
Yes. So tip number four is, again, coming down to saying the right words, right? Don't be afraid to say, I don't know. I think I don't know. That phrase is one of the most underrated negotiating tool. But that phrase alone has the power to suck energy out of a fight. Try it with your significant other in a heated argument. Just throw it out there. You know what? If I tell you the truth, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And see what happens. It creates almost like a field where the other person feels like their opinion is expected and appreciated. I saw that phrase from a book that was written in early 60s, and I completely dismissed it at the time. I was like, well, this book is so old. But I was also way younger. And when you are younger, you feel like, I don't know, is a huge hit in a negative way in your self-esteem. What do you mean I don't know? If I don't know who I am and if I don't have an answer to everything in the world, then why am I even speaking here, right? But I have seen this tip pop up here and there in negotiating books. And more recently, I saw an interview with Dalai Lama. He was asked this very deep and sophisticated metaphysical questions, and he just threw it out there. He sat there and smiled and said, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the reason for this COVID is. And people were just shocked by it. And a lot of them kind of chuckled. They didn't know if he was making a joke or was he being serious. But everybody in the room loved him more for it, that he was able to be that confident and say, I don't know. And like allow other opinions to the table as well, not just his, which was really magical. So use it. I don't know.
The power of expressions. People, I've been writing them down for a few years. I think I should have written them down before, but I had a 100-year-old friend, Johnny Farrell, who moved to Perth, and I went out to speak at his 100th birthday, and he had this expression, which I picked up. He said it to his grandchildren, his daughter. He used to just say, is that right? Now, they were usually wrong, or they were making some sort of sweeping statement, and he'd go, is that right? Okay. And I noticed him saying this, and I thought, what a brilliant way of, rather than contradicting them, people make this, what a brilliant way. And I've put that into my armory as well. And if the Dalai Lama can say that, then we all should be saying that. That was a trick, actually, when you were teaching, wasn't it, to admit you didn't know, but the real trick was to find out the answer. And of course, we can see through what we call bullshit over here. I don't know if you use the word bullshit in America or anywhere. Of course you don't. You never swear at all, but spin.
Oh, I do. I have two kids. I swear.
Okay. And they're 13 and 10, so I'm sure they're great negotiators, aren't they? Better than you.
With their parents, they're great negotiators because they have very keenly observed our every trigger point, our every weak point, and our every strong point. They know exactly how to negotiate. And you can see it, you know, when you go to a grocery store and there is a little kid with a mom waiting their turn to pay at the cashiers, they always put those really cheap little candies and knickknacks right around that, right? And when you pay attention to those situations, how this tiny little 3-4-year-olds are negotiating with their parents, how they first kind of look at the candy and then they look at the mom, they don't just go in, hey, I want this. There's a process that they have already learned and mastered how to get that 59-cent, you know, Skittles package. And we all have the ability to be really great negotiators because you have parents, you got a really good start.
I actually think it's built in, Ava. I think it comes before then. I think that you pop out your mum's womb, you have a quick look round, make sure it's all right. And then you start crying and you get fed and you go, oh, this is how it works then. That's all I've got to do, cry. Mm-hmm. And I think I mentioned before that I worked for a guy who used to throw his toys out the pram and get his own way all the time. And he was 50. He didn't get his own way with me because you have to find a more subtle way of dealing with them. Actually, in a supermarket queue, I'm always observing, always watching what's going on. And I really want to usually give the parents a bit of coaching on what's going on. But I did try that once and they didn't get it. So not really a good idea. And I think we got one more tip, or was that it?
Yes, we have one more final tip.
Fantastic.
And this is going right along with everything that Derek is saying as well. Everything in your life is a negotiation constantly. And in real estate, I tell the new real estate brokers and also the experienced ones, the moment you pick up the phone and you first speak to your clients, you are already negotiating a deal. They may not know it and they don't know that you are doing it, but you are already planting seeds. The way you talk about houses, the way you talk about problems, the way you talk about yourself, the way you talk about other brokers, the way you dress, it's so important. The way you present yourself, the way you hold your bag is a negotiation technique. So when you go out there, just keep it in the back of your head that the way you present yourself is the way the world perceives you. And if you haven't figured out what you like, but who you want to be, who you want to be perceived as, then you can't go out there and be upset at the world. Well, they don't get me. Well, yeah. Do you have clarity of who you are? Because if you don't, we all get mixed signals and it really muddies the water. So just remember, everything is a negotiating technique that you put out there.
So this is the first book I ever bought on negotiation, written by Gavin Kennedy. I bought it in 1989. What a fabulous title. I did try and steal it, but that wouldn't have been a good idea. That wouldn't have given good karma, would it? But fabulous book written 40 years ago. The Scotsman, not with us anymore, but I never thought I'd write a book on the first time I wrote that. Yeah, and most people don't understand negotiation. They don't look at their kids, and those who've got kids and grandkids, have a look at how they operate, and actually you can learn a lot from the way they operate. A couple of quick questions in the chat box that I'm going to respond to. Duncan asks why the fact that the Brexit negotiations that have only got 2 weeks to run are going on into the night. And that is, of course, all about ego again, all about ego. It might be for the public, it might be for the press, but whatever happens on Brexit, and I still forecast there'll be a deal on the 30th of December or whatever, all sides have got to look like they won. the British, the European negotiators that have paid a fortune, and each one of the countries that still wants to do business. So that's really interesting. Alex says pausing is a great tip. Actually, it's so right. And I know Alex has done a lot of negotiations. We've just got to stop. We've got to give our brain time to recover. We wake up in the middle of the night with ideas. We've talked about auto writing in the middle of the night when you've got stress going on. Get things down on paper. Alex says, allow it to mature as a draft overnight and reread it before you send it. I mean, I think that counts for all emails at this time of night. We shouldn't really press send if there's any sort of conflict or toxicity in them. So absolutely right. So Ava, that was absolutely fantastic. I'm going to close the recording in a minute, but I'd like you to stay on and answer any questions when the recording's off. So thanks for joining us, Ava Fenari from New Mexico, Albuquerque, where it's snowing yesterday. Thanks for joining us, and perhaps you'll come back and join us again.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Derek, and you are really awesome and amazing, and it was just a pleasure to spend this, for me, a Monday morning, a start to the new week with you here.
I forgot it was Monday morning. Sorry, it's dark here, and thanks for joining us.